Well, Catholic social activist Dorothy Day died in 1980, but the work she began in the early 20th century goes on. There are more than 200 of her Catholic worker houses across the country where they feed, clothe, and shelter the needy. Her followers continue to protest injustice and war in all forms. And the Catholic Worker, the newspaper she helped found in 1933, remains an important voice for the Catholic left. Her devotion to the poor has drawn comparisons to Mother Teresa, but Dorothy Day often said, "Don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed so easily." Well, nonetheless, earlier this month, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops voted unanimously to move forward with Dorothy Day's canonization cause. And some of her friends are wondering, why are so many conservative cardinals backing a hero of the Catholic left? Well, joining us to talk about all of this is Robert Ellsberg. He's the publisher of Orbis Books, the editor of Dorothy Day's journals called The Duty of Delight, and her collected letters, All the Way to Heaven. In 1975, Robert dropped out of college to go to work at the Catholic Worker. He joins us now. Robert, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And the name Ellsberg will be familiar. You are the son of Daniel Ellsberg?
That's correct.
Well, you know, we were wondering if perhaps this is why you were drawn to Dorothy Day when you were something like, what, 19 years old. Was it in part because of what you'd seen growing up with your dad's anti-war activism in the Pentagon Papers?
I think there was definitely a connection, and I had grown up with his example of taking enormous risks to follow his conscience in opposing an unjust war. And I think that as I was facing the draft at that age, I was searching for my own way. And because I had been seeking some way to kind of connect my own faith with commitment to peace, I was attracted to Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker.
Well, this was the Catholic Worker that you'd come to know. Take us back, though, to how it came to be and who Dorothy Day was. I mean, she came to New York from Chicago in 1916. Her family had moved a bit before that, though. I was reading that at one point she got a real taste of poverty. Her father lost his job. This is before there were any social safety nets. But then he became a sports writer. They had a comfortable job in Chicago. You know, she went to college, but it didn't interest her. She was far more interested in these sort of social justice issues. It seemed to be a real cord running through her early on.
Well, it was a kind of an exciting a time when there were, you know, vibrant radical social movements where socialists and labor organizers and the IWW and countercultural movements in the arts had a big role on the public stage. And that's what drew her to New York.
1917, she went to prison for being one of 40 women in front of the White House protesting women's exclusion from the vote. She seemed to be almost drawn to these situations where she got to see firsthand social protest or the life of the poor.
She very much identified with the struggle for a more just world. And the kind of turning point in her life when she was attracted to become a Catholic was to find some way to put her Catholic faith together with that strong commitment to social justice.
Well, hold on a second, because how did that happen? Here she is, you know, they're considering appointing her a saint, but she was an Episcopal.
Episcopalian. Baptized in the Episcopal Church, but she had really fallen away from Christianity. She said, you know, saints did a lot to take care of the poor, but where were the saints to do away with poverty? And she felt that it was the labor organizers and the radicals who were trying to create that better world. But she went through a lot of painful experiences in her youth. Probably the most critical part of that was a sort of fatal attraction she had to a man. She became pregnant. He said he would leave her if she didn't have an abortion, so she had an abortion. Not an easy thing to do back then. And he left her anyway. And she was very dejected by this, and she tried to commit suicide a couple of times. So she went through this time of real searching, and where just the social activism didn't seem to answer the kind of hunger in her heart.
Well, that is key, you know, that she early on had an abortion. Just hold that thought, because it will come up later. She then went on and had a four-year common-law marriage with Forster Batterham, the great love of her life, but he was an anarchist. He didn't believe in a god. He didn't believe in marriage. He didn't believe in bringing children into the world that he saw as violent. And she became pregnant again and was just heartbroken when he would not marry her, but had the child anyway.
The birth of her child was a great turning point in her life. She felt just a tremendous sense of joy and peace, and it really turned her heart to God. And she decided she wanted to become a Catholic, and Forster wouldn't have anything to do with marriage. And so that meant a very painful separation from him.
Well, she said one of her inspirations for conversion was seeing the mother of a friend, a Catholic woman, praying on her knees. But it became clear what kind of a Catholic she was going to be. She went to her first communion, and someone asked about her husband, and she said, "Oh, I'm not married," and they were appalled. So
yeah, she told me that story. She said this to a woman there, "I've got to get home and take care of my baby," and the woman said, "I didn't realize you were married." And she said, "Oh, I'm not." And she said that she saw a stricken look on the woman's face.
Well, I love that story because it's sort of early on. She was going to be a Catholic, but maybe not the kind of Catholic that some Catholics would appreciate, you know, very much anti-war. But there were times when that wasn't popular. The Spanish Civil War in 1936, the fascist side led by Franco was a defender of the Catholic faith. Nearly every Catholic bishop and publication, you know, rallied behind Franco, but her Catholic Worker held fast.
Well, I should say the very first few years when she started the Catholic Worker, it was very popular and the circulation grew almost immediately to about 100,000 or so. And then when she maintained a pacifist position during this Spanish Civil War, it plummeted. And, of course, then when she continued that through World War II, almost everybody turned away. She was very, very isolated. Mm-hmm. And she continued, though, that stand all through the Cold War, going to prison year after year for protesting civil defense drills. It was not really until the Vietnam War that there began to be, you know, a large anti-war movement in this country that attracted a lot of Christians, including Catholics. And at that point, you know, she became kind of a revered godmother to this new generation.
Well, and by the way, did your dad, who described himself as more conservative before he embarked on his anti-war activities, did Daniel Ellsberg and Dorothy Day ever intersect?
Yes, actually, before I met her. By that point, you know, he was a public figure in the anti-war movement when she was arrested in California. And he went with Joan Baez to visit her in prison. And she remembered that when I first met her.
Yeah.
He said, "Your father gave me a kiss in prison." So that was a nice introduction.
Robert Ellsberg, son of Daniel Ellsberg. More on Dorothy Day in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Robert Ellsberg, son of the Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and friend of Dorothy Day. Day was a hero of the Catholic left, co-founder of the Catholic Workers Movement, also an anti-war activist. She was also shot at by the KKK in the civil rights era. At 75, was arrested for picketing four farm workers. She's now being embraced for sainthood by conservative cardinals and bishops. They say she turned against abortion after having one and was against a welfare state. So, Robert, you knew her well. What do you think Dorothy Day would think of this conservative push for her sainthood?
Well, that's a complicated question. Dorothy, as you quoted her, often said, "Don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed that easily." And that was not because she was cynical about the making of saints. She had tremendous veneration for saints.
Could you give an example of, you know, what that might mean in her daily life?
Sure. I mean, in the Catholic Worker was often illustrated by pictures of saints performing the works of mercy, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, but also standing with the poor. But however, she was also aware that people tend to put saints on a pedestal. And rather than learn from them and enter into the challenge that they pose to us to live out our faith more heroically, we can kind of say, "Well, I'm not a saint like Saint Teresa or something, or like Dorothy Day. Dorothy Day can do those things because she's a saint, but ordinary people can't do that." And she thought that was a way of letting us off the hook. No saint in their lifetime would want people to call them a saint.
Right.
And I think she would be equally concerned now if her story, her narrative, her message, she thought, were being manipulated to serve some different kind of agenda.
What do you mean? What might she think? And not just, you know, of the bishops, but there are others who are now elevating and embracing Dorothy Day that may not have supported her work in the past. You know, so what do you think your suspicions are, or hers might have been?
Well, we've heard a lot in the last, you know, year or so about the dangers of big government and a kind of vilification of social services and the social, you know, safety net as an expression of that it promotes a welfare consciousness or dependency or that sort of thing. And I think that anybody who would use Dorothy Day to support that kind of agenda while also supporting the Pentagon budget and fighting to preserve tax breaks for the wealthiest. She would consider that a gross manipulation of her message. She didn't begrudge the piddling amounts that the government spends on in service to the poor, but she objected to a mentality that we might have that it's the government's job to take care of our neighbor and that we don't have that personal responsibility. And so she talked about, you know, Holy Mother of the state or Holy Mother of the city, you know, as a kind of big impersonal organization, whereas she was kind of challenging Christians to take responsibility for one another. I think that's a very different thing than the attitude that, well, we have charity to take care of the poor. It's not the government's job to do that. I think she was highly in favor of a culture of that promotes the common good and where people feel responsible for one another and not an individualistic kind of ethic.
Yeah.
Now, so I wasn't suggesting that the bishops are part of a war against the poor, but Cardinal George, speaking in favor of her canonization, said that, you know, she was opponent of big government and totalitarianism, and it seemed as if he was invoking her example in the context of the criticism that the bishops have made about the Affordable Health Care Act and certain provisions there, which was not really her agenda.
Well, her granddaughter, Martha Hennessy, volunteers at Mary House. That's the Catholic Worker Refuge for the Poor in East Village.
Mm-hmm.
And she said in an interview that she found the bishop's increasing focus on her grandmother, Dorothy Day's, abortion uncomfortable because she said, how about the birth of her daughter, the one that she did have, which was more important for her conversion? And her wish was that there was less focus on the abortion that Dorothy Day later spoke of as a tragedy and focus more on the birth.
I think that there's another way that her narrative is being crafted, which is to say that she represents this example of kind of a great sinner who became a great saint, kind of floundering around having a child out of wedlock and trying to commit suicide and whatever. I mean, all that kind of whatever that represents, that floundering kind of searching time of her life. In that story, the abortion becomes a very critical part of the narrative, whereas in fact it's not something that she ever wrote about or talked about at all. She's very, very private about that. And in her story, in her telling, it was the birth of her daughter that was the crucial event in her life. And I would say the crucial, you know, story of her life is how she put together her faith, however she came to it, and her pre-existing commitment to social justice and that kind of radical spirit. And that was what she sort of invented, the conjunction of this connection between, you know, the practice of charity and the works of justice. That is, I think, her most distinctive, challenging gift.
Well, and so what do you wish for? By the way, you also converted to Catholicism, inspired by Dorothy Day, if I've got that right.
Yes, well, during my years of living there, I ultimately decided to become a Catholic. And I don't know whether it would have happened if I hadn't had the kind of living example of someone like Dorothy Day, but also the stories of the saints that she introduced me to and the community that mm-hmm. she, the tradition she represented.
Well, that was a miracle in your life, but as you know, the Vatican has to determine that two miracles have occurred as a result of prayers to Dorothy Day since her death in order for her to be elevated to sainthood. But what would you like to see? Would you like to have that happen?
I was consulted by Cardinal O'Connor some years ago when he first introduced the idea of promoting her canonization, and I supported it because I think in spite of the ways that it's inevitable that her story will be manipulated or adapted to other agendas, she's a person of our time, and her message is so accessible through her own writing that it can't really be dismissed that easily. And I think that we'll always now... there'll be space within the Catholic tradition for a radical like Dorothy Day and the positions that she took on conscience and war and peace and commitment to the poor.
That's Robert Ellsberg, publisher of Orbis Books, editor of The Duty of Delight, Dorothy Day's journals, and All the Way to Heaven, her collected letters, remarking on the possibility that she may be elevated to sainthood within the Catholic Church. Robert, thanks so much for talking to us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that story. Next week on Here and Now, how much does it cost to raise a child? One woman does the math, concludes maybe too much. And still ahead, an ethics class at Penn State takes up a scandal close to home. But the latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. where the program is produced, by Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School has online and on-campus courses for students around the world, extension.harvard.edu, and the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, now showing This Will Have Been, Art, Love, and Politics in the 1980s, icaboston.org.